Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome everybody to That Android Show. I am not your host, JJ Meta. No, I am actually Joe Steinkamp, and I'm here with
Access Anna from the Accessible Android blog. And our other good friend Steve is very ill, so he's not here either. It's just the two of us.
Just us two turkeys. Hey, we hadn't done this in a while. We've actually done one of those yes, two hosty podcasty thingies before. So Yeah, it feels very, very strange. But we've had some weird scheduling issues, and JJ can't make it with us today. And like Anna said, Steve is unwell and having had that problem myself at the beginning of the year for a Serotalk. We wish him all the best, and we also wish Angie all the best because she is not feeling well with Steve either. So get well, you two. We wish the best. But that doesn't mean we can't move on to what's in the news. Well, if you are missing JJ's voice and you're like, oh God, here's another podcast with Joe talking. Well, you could actually go hear another podcast where I'm talking, but JJ talks a whole lot more over at This Year in Assistive Technology for Serospectives. That episode happened earlier this year, and it was hosted by yours truly, but had Jamie Pauls, and it had Lisa Salinger, and it had Aaron from Tech Access Weekly, and it had, JJ. And Android was featured there. Did you know that, Anna?
Actually, there were two Android-related stories. One of them was the great work done on KitKat. It made, I think it was the number 9 spot.
Yeah, yeah. I had it much higher on my personal blog, but yeah.
Me too. Yeah. And the other Android story was Kindle.
Yeah, that amazing Kindle, which Buddy Brannon happened to write about on Serotalk. And then a little birdie told me that you got a gift.
I did. I got a new Kindle HDX. And for anyone starting with the device, Buddy's article is a great idea. The device also has a tutorial, which is very helpful, and there's some great documentation. And maybe in an episode or two, I will do a demo on this show.
You don't happen to have an iPad, do you?
Don't profane my household, sir. I'm supposed to be nice. I'm sorry.
Some people do, like Buddy. Buddy has an iPad. I think he has a regular sized one and an iPad mini. So he'd probably have a lot to say about this article that is here in the show notes, how the Kindle Fire differs from the iPad. It is a very interesting article. Certainly the advertising has been directed towards iPad, where they have a kind of very British voice, and I'm not going to do it because I'll just hear Steve write me and say, don't do that ever again. But a very British voice trying to be kind of the Johnny Ive, and it's talking about the great things about the iPad. And then there's an American voice that comes in and says, yeah, but you know, it's also lighter and thinner and cheaper, and it's not an iPad, but it's pretty cool and it looks better, you know.
This article, it's almost written for, the average person who wants to read books and do some media consumption like movies and so on. And so it's basically saying that the Kindle is better because the display is better, the price is lower, it's faster, it's got a wider Wi-Fi range, the battery life is longer, the keyboard is better, more responsive, I guess, the speakers are clearer. The transferability is much easier. The email and calendar apps work better, blah, 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 blah. So basically, it's a very satisfied Kindle customer.
The walls of the garden are not as high.
Yes.
Yeah. It's still to some respect kind of that. But yeah, there are a lot of people who, you know, if you live in Amazonville, that's great. You know, that is a wonderful device for you. And it's more than a consumption device per se. Because you've got Audible and books and videos and more.
And it really is Amazonville. You know, the real reason I haven't spent a whole lot of time with my Kindle and really gotten gung-ho on it, despite its, you know, Android underlying nature, is that when you start it up, it is very much Amazon universe. If you try to hook up to things like Twitter or Facebook, it'll ask you if it's okay to share your contacts with Amazon. Which just sure put all of, you know, my Big Brother paranoia, you know, on full alert.
Well, I learned about Jeff Bezos's kidney stone, so why not know my Twitter feed? That's
exactly
fine.
And you know, the screen, it has some of the things we know and love from Android, but it's that the home screen. But
that's
it has a lot of, you know,
interesting, because they do fork off some of the gestures and some of the ways of doing things. And you, as an Android aficionado, having used it since the days of 1.6, this is going to be like driving on the other side of the road.
Oh yeah, well, you know, they don't call the screen reader TalkBack, but it does like 90% of the things that TalkBack does exactly the way TalkBack does it, you know?
Not so confusing at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be interesting to see, and Anna's going to talk about that as we've got going forward, and maybe we'll get one day we'll get Buddy in here and we'll talk about it back and forth. But we're actually doing something here that's in podcasting and news terms called burying the lead, and that lead happens to be Nest, purchased by Google.
Now, Nest is the company that is best known for thermostats and
fire
smoke
detectors. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Protect was that, and the what is the name of the other one? Oh my gosh, it's totally left my head. But yeah, the Nest thermostat. There we go. That's why. So yeah.
That's hard to remember, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's so much tech these days, but yes, the Protect and the Nest thermostat.
There's a lot of speculation because it's a little bit of a surprise. Google being this high-tech computer software search information sort of company versus smoke detectors and thermostats. And, you know, there's also been a lot of talk about the fact that the president and CEO of this company is one of the people who helped design the iPad, is it?
Tony Faddle says that he did it because it's about infrastructure, that if they were going to continue on their pathway to development to the Internet of Connected Devices, or Internet of Things, as it's sometimes called, they needed a lot bigger backbone and they needed a lot more help than what they were going to be able to achieve on their own. So what I'd read in some circles was that Google was also kind of one of the original investors, and Apple had a partnership there, like you said, because he had come from Apple, helped design the original iPod. And these devices were sold in Nest stores. I mean, excuse me, Apple stores. You could buy a Nest thermostat in an Apple store. And so you could get some of that. So it was not surprising that some purchasers of Nest went and gave it the products back to the company because they didn't want to be a part of Google and Google's purchase.
Well, and they were also concerned about privacy, which, as we've talked about before, I don't mind Google knowing my stuff because Google helps me in return. You know, I don't care that they know I'm going to Starbucks every Thursday at 2 o'clock, because, you know, that's not a state secret, and Google helps me get there.
I'd be lost without Google now. I've said this on many up show. I'd be lost without Google now.
Oh, Google now is the bomb.
And I know some iOS users who use Google now on iOS and adore it. You know, sometimes they even use that voice search more than they use Siri, for various reasons that I won't speculate, because I'm not an iOS user who does so, but there's a lot to like there. And Chrome in the new Canary builds actually gets Google Now cards. So you could actually sync that across your devices into your Chromebook, which is kind of interesting. It is a big privacy concern. I hear what people are saying, and certainly the tinfoil hats can go round for right or wrong reasons. What I thought was interesting when I was reading a lot of the articles that came out about this story was, you know, Google is not a hardware company. Okay. But they bought Motorola and they left it kind of alone. They really don't jack with Motorola. So I kind of think this might be the same thing. And Google has said something to the effect of that, or at least there's speculation that believes that Google will let it be. But I think only time will tell. Now, what I will say, Anna, is that there were a bunch of people on my Twitter feed, I don't know about yours, but on Facebook and on Twitter, who said, okay, that's it. Accessibility's done because Google bought them. And I thought that was really short-sighted and really a rush to judgment, because we don't know. They weren't all that accessible to begin with. So making the assumption that just now that Google owns them and they'll never be accessible was a bit much for me.
And actually, my own personal opinion is quite the opposite. The company president says that, you know, one of the benefits for him of this purchase is that he can focus on designing and let Google take care of business and of spreading the product worldwide. But another one of the articles on this talked about, as you mentioned before, the Internet of Things. In other words, everything in your house is going to be somehow connected to your Wi-Fi, which that actually scares me because I don't want my bagel and my coffee interrupted by a poor Wi-Fi spot in my house. But
I'm sorry, I could brew. You had a hair dryer going. I'm sorry.
Exactly. But that aside, you know, if everything is going to be connected to my Wi-Fi, I need a way to control it. And I'm totally picturing a cell phone app. And I mean, I don't expect this to happen next week or next year even, but I think that one direction that the Internet of Things can go is to have accessible apps, because at this point, you know, my thermostat isn't accessible and my oven isn't accessible and blah, blah, blah. So I'd be happy to have a cell phone app do these things for me.
I think a good way to understand this for those who are new to Google is the way that they have explained this in many, many situations. They look at it as Star Trek. T. Earl Grey hot, or computer, play Bach. Apple tends to look at it as the Star Wars conversation, like you talking to C-3PO or R2-D2 in a conversational manner. That's why you have Siri act the way she does, that she interacts with you and you kind of add some humanistic personification involved. Google doesn't look at it that way. They like the idea of the Star Trek computer where you tap something or talk to something, ask it a question or ask it to perform a task, and it does. So I think that's kind of an easier way. And the Nest acquisition gets them a lot closer to being able to doing that until they can build their own shuttle and go out into space. But, you know, between AI, all the Street View cars and stuff like that, this makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, I again, we're kind of in the Google universe, so we're willing to let Google have some of that. But I can understand how some people would be very, you know, hesitant. I'm going to get this year's iPad because I don't want to have a device with Touch ID for the very same reason. So it's on both sides of the street.
Yeah.
I will also say that it's good to have differing opinions about things on the other side of the street. Equalize. We have an article here from Access World. Oh my, would Steve have something to say about this article?
Now, the title of the article says that Equalize levels the playing field. And we've had the developers on the show. They're great guys. And I think I agree with the conclusion of this article that for people starting out and feeling a little disoriented in Android, this app is a good way to start. It's basically a launcher, and it provides other apps and resources that a lot of people seem to be interested in, like weather and messaging and so on.
No different than what Code Factory did for us before, what they're starting to do now, releasing a lot of
Exactly. And I'm still
now that that's gone.
I'm still not sure why learning Equalizer or mobile accessibility is any harder or easier than learning Android, but I mean, I guess comfort
zone. Just another home screen in a way, you know?
Yeah.
I look at it the same way that Steve looks at Nova Launcher or the way that JJ just loves Ice Free Shell.
yes.
So, you know, there's choice. There's a lot of choice. And for some people, they're petrified of touch screens. And the same thing happens for iOS. They're just, can you give me hand over hand training? I just don't know. I'm afraid I'm going to break it, or I'm afraid I don't have that tactile feeling. And as a guy who uses a Droid 4 with a fully functional hardware keyboard, I'm not going to throw a giant rock at that big window over there. So I can understand why some of that exists, and I can understand why some people still buy Kyocera flip phones. You know, they just, it's what they knew, it's what they feel comfortable with. So to each his own.
Yep. Speaking of choice, if you're interested in buying a new phone and you're torn between the Moto X and the Moto G, there is a Moto G Google Edition now.
Woohoo!
Yay! So that is a beautiful thing. It's unlocked, and it's basically the more economic brother of the Moto X. Now, the Moto X has dropped down in price, and I just love the fact that it happened after Christmas, not before.
Amazing that. But now you can get it in teak. Or
oh my goodness.
Any other number of wood coverings. Who would have thought that bamboo on your phone would be so popular? But it is incredibly popular. There are so many different options for that Moto X. It is calling my name. If there's no Droid 5, I'm probably heading towards the Moto X. I really am.
I'm really tempted. I have the feeling I'm going to be going there
without soon. A contract, and it's cheaper now. And there's a Google Play edition of that. Now, you know, that if you didn't really want that, it's kind of hard because of the Verizon situation. But
yeah,
there's definitely some great stuff about that. And as someone who is in the Moto universe, I've not had any issues with my Moto. I would buy again from Moto. There's a couple other phone manufacturers we've mentioned here I wouldn't, but those guys are kind of cool.
Yeah, my first phone was a Moto, and I really liked it. And according to the Verizon site, the Moto X is going to get Android 5 whenever and whatever that is.
Exactly. So, pledging now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Before you start calling in, and also if you buy off contract, you can get a Chromecast to go along with that. You know, $35 value, nothing special. But if we're planning on doing that anyway, well then bonus.
Actually, I think that offer expired.
No! I totally should have done it. Free Chromecast. And wood. How could you go wrong?
And wood. Yes.
Doggone it. Oh, well. I'll tell you what has also expired. Some betas. There was the perpetual beta of Ivona text-to-speech. That is updated. I'm still using it, so it could stay in beta. I like Amy. She does very, very well for me. She's the voice on my phone. Also, Pacapella TTS voices have changed. The interface has changed. No, there isn't new FAR voices. JJ will be crushed. But there are some other new voices and new languages. Link in the show notes.
And also, we have a new app from Tiflotechnia. These are the people that do the vocalizer voices for NVDA. The app is called TIPA Reader, T-I-P-A. It's a document reader that supports text, RTF, doc, docs, PDF, and EPUB files. People who have used it on the Eyes-Free list are generally saying positive things about it. It doesn't have any bookmarking features yet, and it sounds like it doesn't keep your place when you come back to a book. But it sounds like a very good beginning, and so hopefully that'll keep on keeping on.
And if you have a Android device, you probably already knew that Google Play services have updated. Oop, surprise, because you can't really do much without saying okay and agree to that one.
Exactly.
What happened there? Did anything cool happen in that update?
Nothing really exciting. Let's see. The only two things that jumped out at me as being interesting are, it says that apps that use location services are going to have improved battery life. We don't really know what that means, but, you know, that would be Ruby. Nice.
That's a good fix.
And also Google Drive being integrated into other apps. So that might be useful, I suppose, depending on what app it is. Agreed. And the last thing is there is, what a shock, more sharing among Google apps.
Yes.
For example, you know, your Gmail address or your contacts when you're on
Google
Plus.
You might have read on twitter.com/thatandroidshow some consternation, kerfuffle, and outright bitching about having Google Plus and Gmail integration. There's some really great stories there. So if you get some time, definitely head on by there and check that out. Also, we have an article there about no worries about the updates, you know, slow down, because really with Google Play services and the like, you know, it's another one of those decoupling articles that reminds everybody that just because you're not on the latest Android, you're not out of luck.
Well, and it points out rightly that because some of the new Google features are actually in Play services now and others are actually in the individual apps, which you can download from the Play Store, the actual OS update is not as big a deal. I think for us, though, for accessibility, the updates to the operating system are still a big deal because we still have a few issues that need ironing out. I think the biggest one, right, for me anyway, is text. I think most other things have really come a long way, and they're doing really well. And I think the text editing is still a little needs help.
Well, it might not have ramifications for you or I, but the woman who got the ticket for Google Glass, actually at the time of the recording, has had her case dismissed. The ticket has been waived, but not the idea that you cannot drive with Google Glass. So there was no precedent set for, you know, you using glass in the car. But what is really interesting is the conversation about that. Now, as much as people freak out about Google Glass, do you think they would freak out even more about Google smart contact lenses? This is breaking news, literally, as we're recording this.
Oh, this is the best story ever. I mean, it totally is. So Google is making these, it's the Google X project, which is where the really hip and happening way out there Google the people hang out.
Yeah.
So you know it's going to be, you know, way out there. And so they're developing these smart contact lenses that have computer chips in them, trying to measure the glucose levels in tears. And they've done some clinical trials. They've had some talks with the FDA. Think it's still early days to start that process. But they have been talking to each other, and Google is looking for partners to push these tests further along. So I have the feeling that that's what this publicity is about, getting the medical community and the research community interested in clinical trials that are farther along in the process. But it just sounds really cool to have contact lenses that tell you what your sugar levels are. And I could totally imagine this connecting somehow to some sort of smartwatch or smartphone, and that would just
thermostat
be the bomb.
Or protect
totally.
sharing your blood sugars on Google Plus through your
my thermostat would know that my sugar is low, so it's got to kick up a little bit.
It told the refrigerator to get something ready for you. You know, hey,
exactly.
Your sugar's dropping. Get some juice. Something. But you listened to this Eyes on Success bit on Google Glass, you know, because I don't think I would ever be using contact lenses, but I'm all for Google Glass. What did you think of this?
Well, you know, I really am fascinated by Google Glass. I want to get my hands on one because I'm just imagining all sorts of things that we would do with them, you know, OCR to read signs and things
instant
in buildings.
Translation.
Oh, yeah. And so I can't wait for it to be totally accessible and totally blind friendly. And so, but, you know, I don't even know what they look like. And so Eyes on Success did a podcast that doesn't say a whole lot in terms of what specifically is going on research-wise, but the people being interviewed did a really good job of describing the glasses, of explaining what they look like and how they work. For example, it's basically a pair of glasses, and one of the little bits that go over your ear is bigger than the other, and that's where you would swipe. So it's just interesting details like that. So if you're as curious about what these glasses look like and how they kind of sort of work, you might want to check that interview out.
Yeah, and know that those are the Explorer editions, and by Explorer editions, consider that like beta.
Yes.
Because they'll be different when they come to retail. So this is just to give you an idea of what people have and what they're doing. I had read things that people who had Google Music, you know, the subscription passes, were getting invites to get Google Glass. And of course, people who already have Google Glass can invite others to it. If you have $1,500 to spend.
There is that, yes, that small
matter. The downside of that. There was a lot of things talking at CES. You know, some people are probably looking at their MP3 player and saying, but you guys aren't talking about CES. Wasn't there some cool Android news at CES? Not really. They're really. I saw a Flexi on a Galaxy Gear. That was an article I retweeted from my personal account. There was some other interesting bits about this device or that device or this smartwatch or that smartwatch, but nothing that really jumped out at us. But this trend, this desire, this absolute furor to have Windroid. That's Windows and Android together again.
Now, that's one of those things that, you know, people want, but I don't know that they actually want anything. So basically, you're supposed to be able to run Android apps on a Windows device using programs like BlueStacks. We recently had a thread on the Eyes Free list where Peter Meyer of the Voice for Android, who's a great guy and he's doing great work, and he's been on our show as well.
Absolutely. Seeing Sound on Twitter.
Yes. Seeing he was asking whether that was accessible, the idea being that you would carry your netbook and some USB glasses to use his app. And so some people tested it, and they said, well, you need help getting TalkBack going. And the interface wasn't all that accessible. So for us, I'm not sure that it would be all that useful. But I think in general, why do you want Android on your Windows machine? Why?
If you were in a bring-your-own-device environment, and at work was Windows, but you wanted to have your own stuff in Android, and IT didn't kill you running two different operating systems and information couldn't necessarily jump from one device to another, there was a possibility of actually detaching, you know, the tablet, the screen, and then running Android. But those devices, unfortunately, run into one of two issues. One, they're underpowered, or two, they don't get the latest version of anything, so you're going to have to mod.
Yeah, exactly.
And it may be a mod world, but I'm just not sure that that would work out in the end. I mean, I at least understand why people would want that. It's kind of the same reason why would somebody do a Hackintosh? You know, you could do a non-Apple hardware and you could run OS X on it, but was that really the thing you wanted to do? Or, you know, while we're talking about modding and hacking and all that other fun stuff, also another good friend of the show who's been on our show, Nolan, is back in the game, and he has fired up his Twitter. And he is interested in bringing Spiel to things like, not Chrome. He's looking to bring Spiel over to things like CyanogenMod and other things like that. So that might be something you want to follow along with. Matt Campbell, Serotek's own lead programmer, tweeted that, and I retweeted it from That Android Show. So once again, twitter.com, That Android Show. And definitely find out more about that to help out Nolan if you're a big fan of Spiel.
Definitely.
Well, we might have gone through the news faster than I think we have in a really long time. And I can say that if you were tired of hearing our voices, I'm sorry, you're going to hear them again, because we have some interesting stuff still to come. And Anne and I were all over it. We talked to Anunce Productions, and they were on our very, very, very first That Android Show before.
So it's great that they're back.
Yeah. Back when we used to be Tech Chat, and then we turned this over to its own monthly show, Quasi Mensa was one of our very first guests. And I think it might be good to go over the game that has updated several times since then. Let's start it off with one of his first projects, Stem Stumper for Android.
Stem Stumper, landscape, loading. Stem Stumper, play now.
Ooh, play now. Stem Stumper! This is a wonderful app, and we really didn't talk about it a lot as far as the tutorial went way back on episode 1 of That Android Show. And I've actually played this game to its proper conclusion before the bonus levels came about in the iOS land. So I'm kind of familiar with the differences between this and iOS, and we'll just go through the tutorial a little in case you have never done this. This is a free app on Google Play now. You can actually buy a version to get rid of ads within the game, and that's over in the options setting. But if you've never played this, Stem Stumper is a really interesting way of getting to learn your screen or do some non-visual training. And by that I mean, well, let me just get there real quick. Let's do play now.
Screen off. 5:30 p.m.
By the way, you can flick if you want to, but it's much better if you do discovery by moving around the screen. So sonar. The sonar method is that the screen is black. You still can see white lines over it to form a grid to give you some types of visual representation, but you don't know what's behind each square on the screen. And visually, the way this is a giant grid. You're going to move around a character over obstacles or through obstacles to be able to eat fertilizer. To make it to, and the fertilizer is your goal, and fertilizer helps you power up. The more fertilizer you have, the more points you'll have, the better carrots you'll get, which is a star rating system. And if you use things to help you get to the carrots, to help you defeat obstacles, it takes away from your flower power. And you really want to keep that flower power meter high by finding the shortest way from the bottom right of the screen to wherever the fertilizer is. And there's more than one fertilizer as you go further within the levels themselves. So that's kind of a basic idea, but sonar means that you can't see any of that. Without sonar, you actually can get a visual representation of what's on the screen. So this is a great training aid for those who are trying to learn how to do things non-visually. If you're trying to train somebody under blindfold training, but they're a little kind of hesitant to putting on a blindfold, this is kind of one step there to getting them to understand that there are ways of doing things non-visually. Or maybe it's a blind parent wanting to show their children what it's like to navigate and have geo kind of issues within a space and kind of train them that way. Or you just want to go ahead and get that achievement too for doing the game non-visually. So sonar's mode, really highly addictive, by the way. And of course, for those of you who are totally blind listening to that, go ahead and go to sonar mode and you'll have no problems on either side. And let me show you why. I'm going to go over to the non-sonar mode for this demonstration.
Play using audio. Make sure you blow up the right angry acorns. Tap to continue.
Okay, so the angry acorns, and I'll demonstrate that here in a second.
D6.
So I'm going to move my finger around this grid. I'm holding my phone in landscape. Now that's a big difference from the iOS version is the grid coordinates. The initial version of Stem Stumper for iOS, it really was you just moving your finger around and discovering things and not having a general idea of where on the grid you are. The grid starts with the very bottom of the phone being row one, if you will. Kind of like, I guess, an upside down Excel table. And then A on the far left of the grid is your first column. So if I move my finger down here to the bottom left, so the fertilizer is over by A2 because I moved my finger up when it said fertilizer. So I've got to figure out a way to get my character who's down here.
K2. K1.
So I'm over here on K1. I got to get over to A2. And if I run my fingers just around to see what would happen if I go over that way.
H1.
Well, I'm going to run into something. So I got to find a way to get around that something to get over to that fertilizer. Angry acorn. So I tapped on him and it blew a hole in that wall. So the first sounds you heard, that those are walls and I got to get through those walls. Then the angry acorn sound blew open a hole into those walls and now I can get past those areas. So
E6.
So the row of H down by 4, 3, 2, 1 were still walls, but I blew a hole in 5 and 6, and now my character can travel from K1 down in the bottom right all the way across to Oops, no I can't. There's another wall blocking me.
F5, E5, D6, D7, angry acorn top, D8.
So, and you can actually, if this is too much noise for you and too many things going on, and I generally, on the iOS version, I turn off any superfluous music. But you need it, of course, to determine where you are or where your character is on the screen in relation to things. But you can actually just highlight things you want to find. Right? So I could just find the angry acorn. The closer you get to something, the louder it's going to be on the screen. Okay, that beep, 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 beep noise is telling me that I'm really low on flower power and I better find some fertilizer. And that matters, because the more curious carrots you get, the more levels you're going to be able to unlock as you further go through the game. And there's tons of levels, and it gets more difficult, and you get slingshots, and you get other weaponry that you can do to knock down all these things to be able to get to your fertilizer. Sometimes there's things you have to get across water moats, and there might be 8 fertilizers on the screen at once. I've played this here on my Droid 4, running an older Jelly Bean 4.1.2. Of course, it works with the Nexus 7. You have the ability to do voice recording, so if you actually want to do a tutorial for somebody, you can record your voice within the app and also tie that to the level and upload it. You can share Facebook and Twitter. A lot of neat social applications that have been added in here by Quasi. And you also have the ability to go into settings and turn off ads by purchasing that. And I highly suggest that because, as you hear in this particular interview, not just with Stem Stumper, Spellstack as well, this is a developer that has been long, long, long time in mobile working on accessibility and is very open to meeting our needs on both VoiceOver and TalkBack. So please go ahead and buy those ads right on out of there and help out this developer, because he's done a lot for us. So a hearty recommendation for me, go get it, go buy it, and well, by getting those ads out of the way, support Anunce, and we're going to be right back in a little bit. It's the Anna and Joe version of That Android Show, and Anna's going to show you the Spellstack app still, and we're actually going to sit down now and talk to Quasi. And this was an interview done earlier this month, and there's some links in the show notes that are mentioned here about tutorials and the like. So make sure that you follow up with us and get the Google Play links so you can go directly to these apps that are recommended and to some of the tutorials. Tutorials! I almost forgot! There is some amazing tutorials within Stem Stumper that work really great with VoiceOver and TalkBack. So if any of this sounded confusing in my weird demonstration of Stem Stumper, try it for yourself, because the tutorials will walk you through it. And remember, you want to discover your screen. Don't flick, pick, and stick. Move your finger around, and that will help you understand the layout a lot better. So again, go grab that now. And speaking of now, right after this little sounder, we'll talk to Quasi and see what's going on with Spellstack.
Today we're talking to Quasi Mensah from Anansi Productions. He is the developer of Stem Stumper and a new game called Spellstack. So we're going to start with some general background information, which is what we generally do during our interviews. Tell us a little bit about Anansi Productions. How long have you been around, and what is it that you do?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on. But Anansi Productions, we make mobile games. I've been around for about 3 years now. It's been a while, off and on with like contract work I've been doing. But yeah, the whole idea is we're trying to make games that include as many people as possible.
And what got you interested into developing accessible games?
I kind of wanted to, I've always wanted to make video games. That's always what I wanted to do before Anansi. I was working for another game developer in Boston. But I knew I kind of wanted to have games that had more of a statement behind them, that had more of inclusivity is something I care about deeply. And kind of as an engineer, And there's no reason for me to not focus on like the technical aspect of like accessibility, of blind accessibility. It's kind of, if you're making a video game, that's kind of the hardest part, like traditionally, is like, how do you get people to understand what's going on if they can't see? Or at least that's what traditionally people think about. Like, I won't tell you how many times I've tried to show people the screen reader stuff in STEM Stumper, and they're just like refuse to believe that like it worked for people who can't see, because they just didn't know it was there. Just kind of wanted to make more of a statement with our games about like the type of company we want to be.
Yeah, I guess it would be the ultimate challenge for a video game to develop one without video. Yeah. Now, regardless of platform, what are some of the unique challenges of developing accessible games?
I think there's the technical challenge. You're working with code that a lot of other people aren't necessarily touching, so there aren't a lot of examples to guide you. But I think the biggest challenge is more the design aspect, especially on SpellStack. It kind of made me like, oh, I have to actually know what, like, looking at a lot of textbooks on like human-computer interactions and good like user experience design, because a lot of those people have solved that problem already and are like really good at that. And you have to be really good at that if you're going to come up with something that's also going to work for somebody who's missing, like, who can't see.
Mm-hmm. So it's more about how to present the concept to the end user,
right,
than how to design it, develop it?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, a good chunk of SpellStack's development was... SpellStack was, like, done for a while. It was just, like, the last 3 or 4 months were just, like, oh, my God, nobody knows how to play this game. Have to figure out, like, how to change all these things so that people understand what's going on better. And one of the interesting things is that, like, those type of problems were... And it wasn't just, like, a blind accessibility issue. It was, like, a pure design. Like, people who were sighted and not sighted kind of needed more guidance about what was going on. And one kind of leads to the other. If you make things clearer for, you know, someone who's sighted, it makes things clearer for someone who isn't sighted, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of backtrack a little bit. STEM Stumper was your first game. Mm-hmm. Tell us briefly about it, to sort of describe it and tell us what the goal is, how somebody would play it.
Okay. Basically, you're basically making a Mimia the Vine is searching around the level for different for fertilizer. But she has obstacles that can be in her way. And in order to guide your way through the obstacles, you have to find things like to blow them up or clear them out of the way. But the really cool thing is that all the important items on the board all have their own soundtrack. So as you get closer to something, more and more instruments from the soundtrack pop in. And as you get farther away, the instruments pop out. So you can use, you know, the ambient amount of music in the level to figure out where you are relative to something else.
Now, it was one of the first accessible games on Android, and this was back before we had Explore by Touch, so everything had to be done with the D-pad.
Yeah.
What were some of the challenges you had specifically with Android at that time?
One, they still have a documentation issue. It's really hard for me as a developer to kind of get under hood and figure out what's going on, especially there are a lot of performance issues. Like, getting it to actually, like, find what's to the right, find what's to the left, actually took a surprising, like, amount of time and was kind of slow. I've tried contacting the people, like, the developers on, like, iFree, or, like, trying to contact them directly and haven't gotten responses from them. So that's made things a little bit harder. And then also just kind of the whole Android in general, you probably hear this from a lot of other devs, it's just figuring out how to make money on that platform versus iPhone. So it's a lot of, one of those things where, like, it's a lot more work, and is it worth the effort?
Is that because things on Android tend to sell for less money, or why is that?
Well, they tend to sell for less, and I think also they tend to sell for less money if you're charging for money up front. One of the things I've noticed with SpellStack is we have a pretty good traction on Android, where we're making less money per user, but we have more users.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of evens out. And I think that's also just me kind of becoming more mature and understanding the platform a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I kind of did Android kind of after the fact. With SpellStack, I kind of did Android and iOS hand in hand to kind of make sure things were working across both.
So it sounds like there is... a difference even for developers in terms of how they get their stuff out and how the platform works.
Yeah. And then also Android, now that I think about it, Android's actually added a lot of stuff since I first did Stem Stemper to make it easier to make your stuff accessible.
Actually, that leads into my next question. Mm-hmm. Development on Stem Stemper did stop for a little while. Uh-huh. And during that pause, there was a lot of change to accessibility. What made you decide to come back to Stem Stemper? Is it because you had more support as far as accessibility goes?
Well, to be honest, the decision to go back to Stem Stemper was really, I knew I was developing Spellstack, and I kind of wanted to be able to test things I wanted to do with Spellstack with a game that was already out there. So, like, dropping Stem Stemper to free and then putting in, like, the whole, like, pay money to turn off ads thing, I knew I wanted to do for that for Spellstack, so I tested it out in Stem Stemper. Stem Stemper was also kind of my testing ground for, like, you know, making sure the accessibility stuff worked in Stem Stemper so that when I use it for Spellstack, it was already there. So the decision to kind of start development on Stem Stemper again was really guided by Spellstack.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it was sort of your testing ground learning app, sort of.
Right. Yeah. And then also, to be honest, I was like working on contract jobs and other stuff to kind of help pay the bills between the two. So like that kind of cut into my dev time.
Right. So let's talk about Spellstack now, which is the newest game. Mm-hmm. Describe it to tell us briefly how it works and what the objective is.
Okay. Spellstack is kind of it's a mix between Connect Four and Scrabble, where you're making words. You can also break the other player's words. You can, you know, do things to screw around with the other player. But basically, you're moving letters around in order to make words and then trying to get more points than the other player. I actually just finished making an audio tutorial walkthrough guide thing because a lot of people have been asking for it on Twitter.
So is it a little bit like tic-tac-toe only with words?
Yes. So it's supposed to be kind of like tic-tac-toe. It's actually supposed to be, I don't know if you're familiar with kind of Go. Go is this Chinese board game that's all about capturing other people's stones. And it has like a lot of depth to it. And we took a lot from that. But there are a lot of people who aren't actually familiar with it. So I tend to like not talk about that experience a ton, but it's kind of like tic-tac-toe, where it's all about like strategically surrounding people and making sure, you know, they don't connect with each other and whatnot.
So just to be clear, so my goal is to write the word, say, vertically up and down. And so the opponent is trying to keep me from writing the word.
You can actually form the word any way you want to. It's like Boggle, where the word, I don't know if you're familiar with Boggle, but the letters just have to be connecting in order. Mm-hmm. And like you're trying to make words with your tiles, and the other player is trying to make words with their tiles. And then you can either spend time stopping them from making their word, or you can just make your word and defend it. So there's kind of this defense versus offense aspect to it also, where you can be worried about like, I'm going to make the best word I can for the most points, or I'm going to mess with the other player's word and make sure they don't get points for it and break their word if they've already made one in order to, you know, make sure they don't score on it. So there's kind of a little bit of deviousness to the game also.
Deviousness is always a beautiful thing. So it sounds like the idea for Spellstack came from the game Go, or is it a combination of things?
It's a combination of things, but it came from like a lot of different things congealing in my head, but it's a mix of a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it very intriguing. I like word games and anagrams and things like that. So I'm supposed to be doing work today, and I haven't done very much because I've been playing with the game. So now Spellstack takes full advantage of Explore by Touch because we have it now. And the letters are laid out in a grid. Mm-hmm. So what tips can you give players to work with your game?
So the game happens on a 5x5 grid. Well, a thing a lot of people are kind of getting stuck on, at least from what I've seen on Twitter, is that letters in each column stack. So if you have like a letter on top of another, you can't move the letter beneath it until you move the one on top. Spellstack also has like an auto move feature in, where basically if you just like select, like if you select C-A-T, for cat, and then just try to submit it, Spellstack will try to auto move the letters around so that they're touching each other. You can use that if you're getting stuck on moving letters around. The only thing is, like, you're not necessarily going to get the most points by doing that. And I think the big thing, and the thing we added the tutorial for in our next version, is people, I guess, were getting a little stuck on locked letters, what it means when a letter is locked. If a letter is locked, that means you basically have to weaken it. You have to, so like, if it's a player one tile and it's locked, you have to surround it with more player two tiles and move player one tiles away from it in order to try and weaken it down to 0 points so you can steal it or so it unlocks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was like enough that like, oh, shucks, I need to like add a tutorial for that, because in the kind of almost in trying to make the tutorial move along as quick as possible so you can get to a real game as soon as possible, I realized I didn't actually like put that information in, and that's pretty key to understanding the game.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the things I was having trouble with. So that's really helpful to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's kind of, the game's been out for a week and I probably should have done this already, but I actually have probably something going on YouTube, which is kind of, and me talking through, playing through those first couple of levels, kind of to give things a little bit more context to people.
Oh, that'd be very good and very helpful. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Do you have that out now, or will it be out soon?
It will probably be out right after this interview. I have it like sitting on my laptop, and excellent. Was going to give it a listen through to make sure I didn't say anything truly stupid before putting it up.
Oh, good. We'll definitely put it in the show notes, because that's mm-hmm. something that'll give us all some other way to avoid useful activities.
But I guess, like you said, you were having trouble with it. What specifically were you getting stuck on?
I wasn't sure how to unlock the squares, or whether I was supposed to or not.
Okay.
Yeah. So your explanation is actually really helpful.
Okay.
You know, there are other accessible games out there, and each game does its own thing in its own way. And I noticed that some of them involve suspending talkback so that you're not working with Explore by Touch. Generally speaking, why would a developer take that road?
I would think that because the whole thing with talkback is kind of like with VoiceOver, if you don't allow direct interaction, is like, you know, a tap becomes a double tap. And iPhones have a way of saying like, no, I only want to single tap this in order for someone to like to mess around with it, kind of like a keyboard app or something. And I don't think Android right. does. Talkback also has, I guess if you ever had like something that's audio intensive, like one of the things that we've been working a lot is making sure announcements don't step on top of each other, or making mm-hmm. sure like when you change focus and it reads the new information, if you did that like mid-announcement, like that announcement is lost now. So kind of, we actually been trying to step back from using announcements and kind of just like try to have labels give you all the information you need. But I can see some places where you need that, but it seemed, yeah.
Actually, that's one thing I like about the game. I was playing with it and things don't overlap. And that's really...
Yeah, that took a lot of work.
Yeah, and that's really helpful because I was playing a mainstream app that is sort of semi-accessible. It's a jumble game and it mostly works, but there's a lot of speech getting interrupted or overlapping, so it makes it a lot less enjoyable. And that's one thing that I really liked about your game.
Thank you.
That was well done. So now Spellstack can be played alone or it can be played with other people. So which came first, alone or with other people?
I think the thing that came, we always knew we wanted to be play other people, whether it was like the local pass and play or the online version. The AI version actually came later. The idea of like, you know, being able to just play on your phone without having to play anybody else. It's actually funny. That came later. But then that fed back into the whole, like, the auto-moving the letters and whatnot for you. That came in because I was like, hey, I'm using similar logic for our AI. I can use this to make people's lives a lot easier for auto-moving letters. Yeah, it kind of all, like, fed back into itself. But being able to play other people came first.
Mm-hmm. And how does that work?
So when you want to play other people, you sign in with either Facebook, Twitter, or you make your own custom account with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you sign in with that, you can find other people that you know on Facebook or Twitter. We have like a find a friend menu that lets you search in, lets you type in the name of the person you're looking for. You can also just start a random match if you just want to find like a random person.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we also do is we let you post on Facebook or Twitter, like, you know, hey, I'm looking for a game, here's a link to join it. And I've been seeing people use that a lot, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So it does work, it goes through Facebook or Twitter, or is that just the way you find the other player?
Well, it uses your Facebook or Twitter credentials in order, like, hey, now, like, I make a player for you. But the cool thing about doing that instead of relying on, like, Google Play or Game Center or whatnot is that you can play your friends across iOS and Android. And even if we, like, I think we're right now, we're also, like, once this dust settles down, we're also thinking about making, like, a web version of the game for people who don't have smartphones, or, like, a Facebook version of the game. And, like, you can sync your online, since we're not using, like, Game Center or whatnot, you can play people across all those different platforms. Which I think is really cool.
So why did you decide not to go with Game Center? Do the other players have to have a Game Center account? Is that what it is?
No, yes. If you go with Game Center, then you can only play other people at Game Center, which means you can't play people on Android. And then trying to do, like, one set of network logic for people who are playing each other in Game Center and another set of network logic for, like, people playing anywhere. It's kind of, I'm only one person, I only have so much time.
Right.
And if it's something that we need to do down the road, I can do that. But I kind of really wanted to make sure that everybody could play each other.
Yeah, definitely. So what kind of feedback have you gotten from people who are trying your game?
I think the biggest feedback is that I really need to get that, like, audio tutorial out. A lot of people are enjoying. It's been interesting, like, on Twitter, we're Spellstack on Twitter. A lot of people have been tweeting at us about, like, little help and suggestions and whatnot. And I think there's a lot of places where I could make the tutorial clear. But I think a lot of people, especially people I know, my friends, a lot of people who don't normally play games on their phone have been giving it a try and, like, oh my gosh, I'm hooked. I can't wait to play it some more. And I think the thing is, there's a little bit of a learning curve because there's a lot going on. But I think once you understand what's going on, you're like, oh, this is, like, really deep and really strategic. And, like, it really, like, exercises your head. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm not a game player either. I tend to doze during the game stories. But I find myself getting hooked. So now, have you noticed any different types of feedback from Android users and iOS users? Or is it pretty much the same feedback?
Pretty much the same feedback. If anything, the one plus of Android is that you don't have to go through Apple's approval process. So I think in the time it takes me to put out one update for iPhone, I can put out three or four for Android. So I can, like, when someone says, like, hey, this tutorial is unclear, like, I can have an Android build the next day that fixes what they're talking about. Whereas with iOS, I kind of have to, like, be careful about, like, when I start that approval process, because that's, like, a week before it actually goes out to players.
Okay, so how do we find out about your apps and where do we get them?
They're all available on either the iOS App Store or Android. Then you can also go to our site, Anansi Productions. I'm guessing you're going to have a link in your show notes to that.
Yes, and Anansi is A-N-A.
A-N-A-N-S-E Productions.
Okay.
And we're also on Twitter. On Twitter, we're A-N-A-N-S-E-P-R-O-D-S. So we're Anansi Prods. And then we also have a Spellstack-specific Twitter, S-P-E-L-L-S-T-A-C-K.
Excellent. And when I searched for Spellstack on the Android Play Store, when I wrote it as one word, it was the very first result. So maybe our listeners will have an easier time finding it that way.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for doing our show, and thanks for the games. I have the feeling that Spellstack is going to be the bane of my existence, because I'll be spending a lot of time with it.
Thank you for playing it. Thank you for supporting me. I wouldn't be able to do this without, you know, everybody supporting Spellstack. And again, if people are stuck and any people need help, we're on Twitter. I am on that pretty much all day answering people. And I guess you can have a link to my email in your show notes if people want to, if email is better for people. But yeah, I'm always up for kind of, you know, if anybody needs help, anybody needs anything clear, please let me know.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Spellstack is a fun word puzzle game. For detailed instructions on how to play, visit the Anansi Productions webpage. Also, the first time you start Spellstack, you're guided through a long series of tutorials which teach you how to interact with the game and also how to plan and carry out strategy. This is just a quick taste to get you started. I'm going to play a game against the computer. I have several options to choose from. The one I've selected is Beginner Betty. She's my speed. Once you start playing the game, you're going to hear some music. I've turned it off for this tutorial. Let's play a game of Spellstack. Most of the game screen is taken up by a 5x5 grid. That means we have 5 columns and 5 rows, 25 blocks in all. Columns are identified by letters from A to E, with A on the far left and E on the far right. Rows are identified by number from 1 to 5, with 1 at the very bottom and 5 at the very top. So the square in the upper left-hand corner is A5. The square in the lower right corner is E1. When we start a new game, 5 letters appear on the board. Our objective is to use at least 3 of these letters to form a word. The tiles can be arranged horizontally, vertically, diagonally, or in some combination. As long as the first letter of the word is touching the second letter of the word is touching the third, and so on, you can spell the word. Imagine a Braille letter D, dots 1, 4, and 5. You can spell a word by placing the first letter in the dot 1 position, the second letter in the dot 4 position, and the third letter in the dot 5 position. The first letter touches the second touches the third. Or you can arrange the tiles so that the first letter is in the dot 1 position, the second letter is in the dot 5 position, and the third letter is in the dot 4 position. The first letter touches the second on the diagonal, and the second touches the third on the vertical. Let's check the bottom row from left to right.
E4 1 point, player tile, select A1. L4 2 points, player tile, select B1. T4 2 points, player tile, select C1. O4 2 points, player tile, select D1. R4 1 point, player tile, select E1.
We have the letters E, L, T, O, R. Echo, Lima, Tango, Oscar, Romeo. Let's use our letters to write the word lore, L-O-R-E. If the tiles were already positioned in a way I can use, then I would simply double tap each letter in the right order. In this case, the letters are scrambled and they're not touching each other. The first thing I'm going to do is touch the letter E and double tap it to select.
E4 1 point, player tile, select A1.
That's the selection sound. Now I'm going to tap a blank square in row E to move the tile there.
Move E to column E.
That's the sound for movement. So now along the bottom row, I have L, T, O, R, starting in column B. And the E is positioned directly above the R. When you move a letter to a new column, the letter appears in the first blank square. I'm almost done. I just need to move the L so that it's above the O. So I'm touching the L and double tapping.
L4 1 point, player tile, select B1. O4 3 points, player tile, select D1.
I'm sliding my finger up.
Move L to column D.
Now that tapping sound tells me that something interesting happened on the screen, so I'm going to explore it to find out what it was. I'm going to start with C1, which is where I expect to find the T.
T4 2 points, player tile, select C1. O4 4 points, player tile, select D1. R4 3 points, player tile, select E1.
That's row 1, columns C, D, and E. Now I'm going to touch row 2, columns D and E.
Empty, C2. L4 4 points, player tile, select D2. E4, 3 points. Player tile. Select E2.
Notice that the point values have changed. If you cluster your letters together, the point values go up. The other benefit for clustering our letters together is that it's harder for our opponent to steal them. So now the letters in the word lore are arranged like a Braille letter G. The L is in the dot one position, the O is in the dot two position, the R is in the dot five position, and the E is in the dot four position. So I'm just going to double tap each letter in that order.
Empty, C2. L4, 4 points, player tile, select D2. O4, 4 points, player tile, select D1. R4, 3 points, player tile, select E1. E4, 3 points, player tile, select E2.
I'm going to double tap the last letter of the word, the E, to submit it.
Selected. E4, 3 points, player tile, and pen. Remove ads, spell stack. Image, slots vacation. Take an exotic vacation. Download slots vacation today and win big with free coins daily. Free, no thanks, free.
Okay, you heard the sound that signals the word was submitted. Spellstack started to say impending word before the ad came up. What impending word means is that my opponent, beginner Betty, can break my word and steal some of my points. If she leaves my word alone, then I get to keep my points. Let's dismiss this ad by tapping on no thanks.
No thanks. No, click, alert, spell stack. Computer is thinking 3, period. Locked, E4, 1 point, player tile, impending word, E2.
Okay.
At the start of your turn, your old word disappears as you get points for it. New tiles drop down for you to use.
All right, beginner Betty took her turn. After that, I get this help message, which I can dismiss.
Don't show again. Dismiss. Undo. Tap the player icons at the top to see what happened last turn.
Another useful help message, which I'm going to dismiss.
Don't show again. Dismiss. Undo.
All right, this is a good opportunity to explore the rest of the screen. Right below the notification area, we have...
Player claims the word lore for 8 points. Player has 8 points. 0 points selected. Your turn.
That's information about me. That was my turn. Remember, I made the word lore.
18 turns left.
That tells us how many turns are left. The game ends after 20 turns or after one player earns 100 points.
Beginner Betty made the word cup. Beginner Betty has 0 points. 1 point selected.
All right, that tells me what Beginner Betty's word was. In this case, it's the word cup.
Settings.
The last control along the top is settings, which allows us to make certain adjustments, like turning off the game music.
Pass.
Pass to skip a turn.
Show help.
And show help messages. Below that, we have the screen. So when I form a word, the word lore, and the word isn't broken, those letters disappear. 5 new letters are added to the board so that Betty can play. The first thing I'm going to do is explore the screen. A future version of Spellstack will include a feature that reads the available letters on the screen. I'm exploring starting at row 1, column A.
Locked, P4, 1 point, beginner Betty tile, impending word, O1. U4, 0 points, beginner Betty tile, impending word, select B1. T4, 0 points, player tile, select C1. Locked, Y4, 2 points, beginner Betty tile, D1. F4, 0 points, beginner Betty tile, select E1.
So along the bottom we have P-U-T-Y-A. Papa, Uniform, Tango, Yankee, Alpha. Let's check row 2, starting at column A.
S40 points, player tile, select A2. S40 points, player tile, select B2. C40 points, beginner Betty tile, impending word, select C2. E40 points, player tile, select D2. G40 points, player tile, select E2.
The second row has A, S, C, E, G. That's Alpha, Sierra, Charlie, Echo, Golf. I'm going to explore the third row.
Empty, A3. Empty, B3. Y44 points, player tile, select C3. Empty, D3. Empty, E3.
All right, this row has two blank squares, the letter Y, as in Yankee, and two more blank squares. And the last two rows are empty. We have a few interesting things to talk about here. One is that you noticed certain squares were locked. That means they're surrounded. The only way I can move them is by moving the letters around them first. The other interesting thing is that some of the letters were in the impending word cup, C-U-P. Impending means that I still have an opportunity to steal her letters and break her word. So again, I'm going to think about a word I can make with these letters. What I noticed is that the first three letters on row one are P-U-T, as in put.
Locked, P4 1 point, beginner Betty tile, impending word, A1. U4 0 points, beginner Betty tile, impending word, select B1. T4 0 points, player tile, select C1.
So I'm thinking I can make put, except that the P is locked. I can't use it unless I move it. But I don't have to, because right above the T, we have the letter C.
C4 0 points, beginner Betty tile, impending word, select C2.
The C isn't locked, and neither is the U, and the T is right next to the U. So I'm going to use two of Betty's letters to make the word cut, C-U-T.
C4 0 points, beginner Betty tile, impending word, select C2. U4 0 points, beginner Betty tile, impending word, select B1. T4 0 points, player tile, select C1.
So I've selected the T, then gone diagonally down and to the left to select the U, and then gone horizontally to the right to select the letter T. I'm going to double tap the T again to submit the word.
Selected. T4 2 points, player tile. When a word is broken, all the letters that aren't stolen disappear from the board.
Very good. That is my mirthful giggle because I have outsmarted beginner Betty. Here's another help message, which we can dismiss.
Don't show again. Dismiss. Selected. T4 2 points, player. Spell stack. Promotion, image, coin dozer, play coin dozer, the smash hit game from Game Circus with over 12 million downloads, free, no thanks. Click, alert, spell stack. Computer is thinking 3 period. Locked, T4 2 points, player tile, impending word, C1. At the start of your turn, your old word disappears as you get points for it, new tiles drop down for you to use.
We hear the sound of me breaking beginner Betty's word. Another help message. Once you become familiar with the game, you can turn these messages off.
Dismiss. Undo. Tap the player icons at the top to see what happened last turn. Don't show again. Dismiss. Undo.
Betty had her turn. And now I get to check the top of the screen.
Player claims the word cut for 8 points. Player has 16 points. 0 points selected. Your turn.
That's me.
16 turns left.
We have 16 turns left.
Beginner Betty made the word too. Beginner Betty has 0 points. 0 points selected.
Okay, and I can explore the screen for yet another round. For more detailed information about how to play the game, visit the Anansi Productions website, which includes a text player's guide, plus YouTube videos on basic and advanced strategies. Once you get the hang of the game, it's very addictive because you're trying to figure out how to outsmart your opponent. The game gives you options for playing against the computer at 4 difficulty levels, playing against someone else, or playing against a contact in your social media. Give it a try and have a lot of fun.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody, to That Android Show. And, hey, just not the same without JJ in the mailbag, so let's only take one. Let's get one from Twitter. How's that sound?
Beautiful. And this tweet comes from Blind Educator, who tells us that the Nook has been accessible for a lot longer than the Kindle, and why haven't we mentioned it? Well, I know the Nook has been accessible since at least the summer. That's when I had a close encounter with my Nook guy at Barnes & Noble. It was a very interesting discussion because he really didn't know what accessibility was, so he just kind of read the card to me, you know? But once we got talking, he actually turned on accessibility, and it sounds like the Nook is pretty much an Android device. Now, I haven't really mentioned it on the show because I haven't had a chance to actually use one. I worked with the Nook guy for about 15 minutes. I was very impressed, but it takes more than 15 minutes to really know, and I don't want to tell our listeners to go out and buy a Nook if I don't know for sure that it works well. So We kind of do things on our own at this show, and so when the bank account is small, research is small.
Yeah, and it's another one of those walled garden things. If you're in the Barnes & Noble universe, then you might be more apt to consider playing with a Nook. If you don't play around in that area, or if you don't already have books on the Nook platform, then that might not necessarily be the place you want to go, and you might look at Google Books and Amazon Books and other things like that for your electronic book reading needs.
In fact, over the holidays, I knew I was going to get a book reader. I didn't know if it would be the Nook or the Kindle, but I actually do have some Kindle books. I have some dictionaries. So I got it just because I had the books. I think it comes down to 6 of one and half dozen of the other.
And not, but like 6 hours later after I read this, I saw an article that said, Nook sales are down 70%. You were interested in getting a Nook, it sounds like you'll have an opportunity to pick one up fairly cheaply, fairly soon. I have heard stories that the hardware is a little slow for modern day Android. And, I bet you if anybody knows, it's probably Mike Arrigo. He's probably furiously typing us an email right as we speak. I'm almost sure of it.
And actually, if any one of our listeners has a Nook, please send in an iReport or an email and tell us about it. Or if you actually want to do a short demo, that would be fantastic. Yeah. Because I like Barnes & Noble. I like going to the cafe and browsing with my friends. It's a great experience. And so I would love to support them. But, I don't know. And so if anybody does know, please share with the class.
Yeah, and I'll put a link to the submission guidelines for SPN in the show notes. If you've ever wondered or ever thought about doing something or ever, how do I do that? Or how do I get on SPN? There's actually a list of submission guidelines, and I'll put that there in the show notes so you can actually read that. You can also find all sorts of show notes over at thatandroidshow.com. Follow us on Twitter. That Android Show, of course, is there. Twitter.com/thatandroidshow. You can send us an email, resources@serotalk.com. That's TALK, SEROTALK.com. And of course, you can leave us a comment right there on the old line of iReports with iBlink Radio on Android and iOS if you feel so inclined. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of That Android Show. Sorry that it was abbreviated. Sorry that we lost a couple of our hosts. But Anna, it's always a pleasure to do this show with you. And why don't you tell everybody where they can find all of your wonderful work?
Well, they can find my work at http://accessibleandroid.wordpress.com. It's going to grow. Trust me, it'll grow soon.
All it needs is a little water, a little sunlight. It'll be good. It'll
sure
be good.
It's totally fine.
You know, winter, summer's coming. It's all good.
Summer's coming. We're in the middle of a cold snap, people.
There you go. You can find Steve, even though he's not here, on Twitter, Talking Droid. So you can find him there, or we link to him through That Android Show on Twitter. You can also find his services over at comproom.co.uk. Also information available on That wonderful Android Show website. JJ Manaw can be found over at Blind Bargains, and of course AT Guys, and you can find him on Twitter over at Blind Bargains. So definitely check that out as well. Elena from Triple Click Home writes some of those news stories over there. So all within the SPN family and empire. And of course myself, I'm Joe Steinkamp. You can find me just about anywhere on SPN. You can find us mostly over at Sarrow Talk, which is the weekly podcast of events and news in the blindness community, www.sarrowtalk.com. And you can subscribe to us on any number of ways through podcatchers, RSS, and of course iTunes. Well, that's going to do it for us, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we will hopefully see you next month with somebody hosting that isn't me.
Bye-bye. Droid.